Once upon a time, 75 million years ago, an evil ruler named Xenu was in charge of 76 planets in our sector of the galaxy. These planets suffered from terrible overpopulation, 178 billion beings on average per planet, in fact. To solve this problem, Xenu, with the assistance of psychologists, and under the pretense of a tax inspection, injected hundreds of billions of people with a mixture of glycol and alcohol, paralyzing them. Xenu then loaded all of these frozen people onto planes that looked exactly like DC-8s, but without engines, and transported them to a planet called Tegeaq. These bodies were stacked around major volcanoes and incinerated with hydrogen bombs. The resultant glut of souls were literally vacuumed to movie theaters, treated with an ersatz Ludovico technique, and released. That done, they floated around aimlessly, bereft of identity, until higher-order beings evolved on that planet, now called Earth. All of the medical and psychological problems in the major creatures of this planet, called humans, can be derived from these souls, now called Thetans. Do you believe this story? Probably not. It sounds like silly science fiction, and in fact maybe the most famous piece of science fiction penned by author and self-help guru L. Ron Hubbard. But now imagine that you've paid upwards of $100,000 and had to sit through hundreds of hours of indoctrination to hear this information, or else you would get pneumonia and die. This silly story is one of the foundational doctrines of Scientology, a religion founded by Hubbard and based on his self-help book Dianetics. But we bring up this story just to get it out of the way. The silly beliefs of Scientology are fodder for humor the world over, joked about by Howard Stern, the FX television show Nip Tuck, even South Park did an amusing and relatively accurate telling of the story. But is this any more silly than a zombie son of God whose body is regularly digested by his followers? Is this any more silly than a history of Israelites in North America being told by a stone at the bottom of a hat? Or that one's sins can be ritualistically transferred to a chicken during a major holiday? To an atheist, not really. So let's ignore that for the rest of the hour and talk about the other things Scientology is known for. Harassment, brainwashing, abuse, censorship, destruction of families, destruction of livelihoods, and fraud. Again, is Scientology alone guilty of these things? No. But in its short history, the Church of Scientology has pursued them with vigor. And because of that, many critics believe that the Church of Scientology is worth special attention. And for the rest of this hour, that is what we will focus on. My name is Sam, and with me today is Mike. How are you, Mike?
Doing good.
All right, so we've got some very interesting news, don't we?
To say the least. This comes from the Southern Poverty Law Center. Black supremacist Nation of Islam pushes white-dominated Scientology. So somebody got chocolate in my peanut butter.
All right.
It turns out that the leader of one racist religious UFO cult is smitten with another UFO cult founded by a racist. Louis Farrakhan, the leader of the Nation of Islam, which the Southern Poverty Law Center has labeled as a racist hate group, has started integrating its ideology with that of L. Ron Hubbard's Church of Scientology.
Yeah.
That's right. The group that claims that Caucasians were created by an evil scientist for the purpose of suppressing black people has started getting cuddly with a church founded by a staunch supporter of South African apartheid.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
According to a May 31st article on Final Call, that's the Nation of Islam's newspaper, nearly 700 nation members have become certified Hubbard Dianetics auditors, and more will soon be trained in Church of Scientology techniques to better prepare them as better servants and saviors of the people by helping to clear up their minds and lives.
Jeez. But this is really big.
This is really big. And if you're wondering what I mean by the Nation of Islam being a UFO cult,
yeah.
A lot of people are most familiar with, you know, Malcolm X,
right,
who is persona non grata with them. He did not leave off well with them. So he is mentioned not once on their website.
Yeah, he left.
But what is mentioned on their website in a number of their speeches is the mother wheel.
Yes.
And if you're familiar with what the mother wheel is, you're actually a pretty rare individual. But for those of you who don't know, the mother wheel first appeared in an interview that Louis Farrakhan did after the Million Man March with Ted Koppel on Nightline in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, he gave a sermon after the Million Man March where he said that the Nation of Islam had an orbiting battle station, a city-sized spaceship, that at one time in the future was going to rain destruction down on white America and save the people who were, you know, of course, adherents of the Nation of Islam.
Right, right.
And I was thinking at first, okay, this is nutty. This has got to be a fluke. Clearly, after this, the Nation of Islam disavowed this stuff. But you can find hundreds
right.
of these speeches, not by just Farrakhan, by dozens of these Nation of Islam guys talking about UFOs and all sorts of stuff. So the fact that they're getting smitten with Hubbard and the Xenu cult makes a lot of sense.
It is pretty, I mean, there are some similarities because they are both, in many ways, UFO cults. They both specifically deal with stuff that happens in space. You know, there's sort of, the Nation of Islam has sort of the Heaven's Gate, the ship is going to come and save us thing going on. The, you know, Scientology doesn't really have that. All the spaceshipery happened in the past. Is that a word, spaceshipery?
It is now.
Okay, awesome. But the thing is they're not just bringing auditors into the situation. And this is the weird thing. We're going to talk about this in our interview with Mark Bunker in a bit. But one of the doctrines of Scientology is something called the suppressive person doctrine. The suppressive person doctrine, which is if you are, there's like 2% of the population that is just nuts, and those people need to be thrown out. And the thing is when Scientology goes after people, when Scientology sends out their investigative reporters and their lawyers to, you know, they sick them on you, they're usually doing it to suppressive people. I don't know if Mark has an official SP declare, but I'm they treat him like an SP. They see him as an SP.
What we're talking about is enemies of the Church of Scientology.
Enemies of the Church of Scientology. Now, this is actually also from the final word, or the final call. Final call. This is from that website, and this is in fact the words of Louis Farrakhan. In Scientology, they talk about the type of people who are called sociopaths. The Scientologists believe that a sociopath is a person who has a suppressive personality, and once you've come under that type of person, you become a potential trouble source. Scientologists also talk of the reactive mind and what is considered as enemies within the reactive mind, called engrams, open paren, demons, close paren. And it is from the reactive mind of the enemy who imposes upon us their sociopathic tendencies that now we are potential trouble sources for ourselves and others. And this is Scientology. He's not using the terminology of the Nation of Islam here. This is the potential trouble source, suppressive person, sociopath, engrams, reactive mind. This is the terminology of Scientology, and here he's using it. And he says, in my study of sociopaths, I have learned that these are persons manifesting antisocial behavior or character traits. I said to some of those in Scientology that we were sharing their knowledge, with me, you know, we have been living under white people for the last 4,000 years since they emerged from the hillsides and caves of Europe. And then he just continues to go on to explain the suppressive person doctrine. In the first sentence, it's pure Scientology. The second paragraph, some of the Nation of Islam stuff manages to creep in. This is amazing.
I wish I could say it's completely surprising. I know that Farrakhan has made a number of alliances with crazy people in the past, whether it's the Klansmen or anti-Semitic groups, or he shares the anti-Semitic ideology.
Yeah.
But the idea of the enemy doctrine, that these are enemies of our group and we have to eradicate them, that's something these two groups have in common. Scientology does it. Nation of Islam does it. That these are enemies of us. We have to stand against them. It's amazing because his alliance with Scientology is just so much... He's really, really enamored with this stuff.
He is. Now, do you think we're seeing the formation of, like, a new, like, mega religion forming out of both Nation of Islam and Scientology?
Probably not. I think what we're going to see is Nation of Islam more likely absorbed into Scientology than vice versa.
Okay.
One of them has a hell of a lot more money than the other.
All right. Well, that's the news. Let's get into the interview. As we reported last week, Alexander Jentsch, member of the Sea Org and son of Church of Scientology International's President Heber Jentsch, was found dead in Los Angeles on June 3rd. A cause of death has not yet been determined and may not be determined. Alexander is the only son of Karen de la Carriere, who was declared a suppressive person and disconnected from her family and Scientologist friends in 2010. In the intervening 2 years, Alexander was in a serious car accident in Dallas and had been self-medicating for severe back pain. According to De La Carriere, Alexander began having difficulty breathing 2 weeks ago and was treated with touch assists by Scientology practitioners. De La Carriere is not being allowed to see the body by Alexander's widow because of the SP declare, and no memorial service will be held by the Church of Scientology, even though a memorial service is part of Scientology and has been penned by L. Ron Hubbard himself. This reason for the lack lack of a memorial service is widely believed to be because of Heber Gentry's imprisonment in The Hole, a prison run by Scientology at Gold Base in Hemet, California. A lot of this doesn't make sense, does it? Well, let's take it from the top. And to help us with that, Mark Bunker, Emmy Award-winning journalist, proprietor of Xenu TV, and known to anonymous everywhere as Wise Beard Man, is with us today. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great, by the way.
When Dianetics was getting started, back before it was even a religion, it was just a self-help thing, the American Psychological Association and other organizations spoke up against Dianetics and how it wasn't really psychotherapy and didn't really work. And as a result, psychologists are now basically the Satan of Scientology, which is why they feature so prominently in the Xenu story.
Hubbard didn't start off antagonistic towards psychiatrists. Dianetics, which is the basis of Scientology, was cobbled together from different psychological precepts that came from Freud and so many other psychologists. But over time, they became the evil beings in the galaxy. Psychiatrists were behind every awful, horrible thing that has ever happened since the dawn of time. And they believed this. Years ago, before Scientology knew who I was, I would go to the Scientology buildings and just wander in and say, hey, what goes on in here? They had a 15-year-old kid babysitting me. So I was chatting with him a little bit, and he would bring up the fact about, back in the Salem witch trial days, it was a psychiatrist that were behind that. And I go, well, yeah. No, I don't think there were any psychiatrists back in that day. And he said, no, I'm sorry, not the psychiatrists, but the pharmaceutical companies. No. But these poor kids who are in this cult, I mean, especially in these Sea Org members, they don't really get an education. They live, eat, and breathe L. Ron Hubbard's writings. And L. Ron Hubbard wrote some truly, truly insane things about the field of psychiatry and basically everything else.
So how do they actually hook people like these 15-year-olds into Scientology? I mean, is it people who already have an aversion to psychiatrists?
They try to lure you down there and start you on the bridge to total freedom, which is this increasingly expensive series of self-help courses that they sell. The E-meter, to many people, many Scientologists, that to them validates everything that Hubbard wrote.
I was curious about the E-meter. Does it actually measure anything? I mean, is it just a can of soup cans, like a love meter at the bar, or does this actually measure something?
It's, you know, measuring the moisture in your palms. It's a standard Wheatstone bridge. I mean, there's nothing really mystical about it, but the Scientologists, it is mystical. It's reading your mind. It's reading your thoughts. It's locating what they call engrams. Hubbard said that when we're in pain or unconscious, we are still absorbing everything that's going on around you. Every sight, every smell, everything is still being recorded by your brain, but it can't understand exactly what's going on because you're either out or you're panicked about something, so your mind is confused. Let me mention that Hubbard has this theory of the brain that there is instead of a conscious and unconscious mind, he calls it the reactive and the analytical mind. Now, the analytical mind is that part of your brain that functions when you're awake and alert, and it works like a computer. It is flawless. It is recording everything you see and do, and it's being stored away efficiently like a fine computer, so you can always draw on it and grab the information that you need. When you're unconscious or in pain, the reactive mind takes over. It's still recording all of this stuff, but it's being stored in what Hubbard calls an engram, this recording of everything that's happening at the moment. So with the E-meter, an auditor is looking for those moments where you have these engrams that are maybe causing you problems currently. Say dad beat you when you were five, and you talk about that, you know, what it was like, you know, how horrible the experience was. The auditor will say, okay, thank you for telling me that. Tell it to me again. Now, expand on it. What do you remember hearing? What do you remember seeing? Well, maybe dad was smoking a cigar that day and his cigar smell was in the room. And now every time you pass somebody who's smoking a cigar, you have this panic in your mind. You can't understand why it causes you a panic, but the engram in your reactive mind is making you remember that moment when dad beat you. So the Scientologists are finding those engrams and they're clearing them.
Meanwhile, they're also recording data for their files to use against Scientologists who leave the fold.
Right. All of these confessionals, essentially, are being recorded and filed and put in folders and stored away. So, you know, any negative thing that you may have admitted about yourself, if leave, they could pull that out and use it against you. They have done that. They of course, claim that they would never do that, but they do it all the time. They go through the folders and cull things to use against people who have become critics of Scientology. But this is the basic process of Scientology that Scientologists so crave, because they feel they're making progress going through their past life incidences. And, you know, when you sit down and talk to a friend and you just talk about something painful in your past, you'll feel better after it.
You'll have a good cry and you go, wow, I never talked about that before. I'm glad I got that out. That's the process essentially in Scientology, but there's this layer that L. Ron Hubbard added to it that makes it look like, oh, well, this is actual science. These are engrams and you're clearing this. So when you get into Scientology, I think there's a bait and switch aspect of Scientology, because when you get in, it's to solve whatever your problem is. When you meet somebody at the stress test table, they're trying to find your ruin. They're trying to find the thing that is really causing you problem and then address that. In this auditing process, you are finding all of these negative things and you're clearing them out. The early courses, all of Scientology is about you, essentially. It's a very self-centered religion. I want to be better. I want to make more money. I want to have a better relationship with my family. I want to be a big shot at work. It's all about improving you as a human being. At a certain point, it stops being about you. That's when you reach the upper levels of OT3 and you discover that it's really about Xenu blowing up in a volcano. That incident is really the cause of all of our problems. That's why there's an exploding volcano on the cover of Dianetics, because L. Ron Hubbard, back around 1965, I think he said, if we put this on the cover, anybody walking past the book will remember subconsciously being blown up in a volcano, and they'll have to grab that book, buy it, and join Scientology. They believe that Xenu blew us up, and the atoms of all of these exploded beings, these thetans, kind of slammed into one another and formed clusters of thetans. And these clusters attached themselves to our bodies and became what they call body thetans, or BTs. So once you reach OT3, you find out that it's not really the engrams that are the problem. It's these BTs that are causing the problems.
So basically the E-meter is a ghost detector?
Essentially, yes. Yes. and by the time you reach this level, you have been so indoctrinated into the Scientology way of thinking that you'll buy into it. You've seen, well, okay, this is working. There's so many facets that they use to convince you that it's all working. But, I mean, people get some benefit from it. I'm not trying to deny anybody the right to audit.
Anytime you get a chance to talk about your problems, you're going to feel better about them. It's standard right. Psychology practice.
Oh, you said the bad word.
All of this is being used to subvert you and to
give to
Scientology's coffers. And they've been pretty successful at that over the decades. The process itself, when Hubbard came up with Dianetics back in 1950 and published the first book, this was a poor man's psychiatry. And it took off quickly as a fad. It was like the hula hoop at the time. People could buy the book and sit down with a friend and audit one another. And suddenly, this became quite a sensation. And it was very popular for a couple of years. Now, the problem is Hubbard, trying to make cash out of it, started, you know, setting up businesses with partners, and he'd open these Dianetic centers, and eventually Hubbard went run off, leaving his partners with all the bills to pay, and it fell apart pretty quickly. So by 1953, with a couple people chasing him across country for not paying bills, he decided, you know, let's turn this into a religion, so we have the cloak of religiosity to protect ourselves in the court. So it kind of morphed into Scientology.
Also, that you don't have to pay taxes anymore.
Right. I mean, those are the two key things that he managed to achieve. And those were the smartest things that Hubbard ever did. There's a telegram he sent to one of his friends, one of his partners, as they were trying to set up Scientology. And he asked this person, so how's everything going on the religion angle? If we can get this, I know we can make it stick. Well, he did. He made it stick. And most cults die when the leader of the group dies. He died in 86, and Scientology is still around. So he put together an operation that has been pretty solid, but it's starting to fall apart now.
Alexander Gentsch was a member of Sea Org. What is Sea Org?
The Sea Org members are the most dedicated people on the planet. They sign a contract to work for about $50 a week if they're lucky. They're working 80 to 100 hours a week. And this contract goes for a billion years.
Hold on. Did you say a billion years?
Right. They sign a billion-year contract to come back lifetime after lifetime to work for Scientology in exchange for their Scientology services. They expect to get, you know, the auditing, counseling sessions that Scientologists so crave. And they believe that going up the bridge to total freedom, which is the increasingly expensive series of courses that Scientologists take to improve their being, it's worth signing a contract to get that bridge for free, essentially.
Right.
But also, they're dedicated people who really believe that they are the only people on the planet who can save the planet. That's why when you see Tom Cruise in a video saying, you know, if there's a car crash, you have to stop as a Scientologist because you're the only people that can help. Not of course paramedics or fire departments. Nobody else can really help like a Scientologist can help.
We're going to go into the break now. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're talking with journalist Mark Bunker, expert on Scientology. We'll be back in a minute.
No human is burned with original sin, nor condemned to live in guilt, nor in need of salvation from the supernatural. I'm Eileen, Vice President of Humanists of Washington, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancement through reason, science, and democracy. Our organization opposes the use of dogma in determining laws and strongly supports marriage equality in Washington. A full range of civil rights is necessary to achieve full personal empowerment in society. Get involved at humanistsofwashington.org.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, Knowledge Night and No Cover Live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
Stop throwing money away.
Shop with NetPro Ink and Toner and save up to 60% off your printing cost. All of our compatible cartridges have a 100% full year quality guarantee. Visit us at www.netprotx.com. That's NetProtx.com.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back to Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. We're here with journalist Mark Bunker, expert on Scientology. Before the break, we were talking with Mark about the death of Alexander Jentsch, son of the rarely seen president of Scientology, Heber Jentsch. In the Alexander Jentsch case, there's a lot of terminology there that people not familiar with Scientology aren't familiar with. And one of those phrases is a suppressive person. Can you explain the suppressive person doctrine?
Yes. L. Ron Hubbard said that 2% of the population are just evil. They are suppressive persons, or SPs, and they can't be saved. You got two choices. You can either audit them up his tone scale to be above 2.0 on the tone scale, or they should be disposed of quietly and without sorrow.
Well,
you know, another SPs should be disposed of quietly and without sorrow. Again, a wonderful religious leader to say such a thing. Anyway, if you're an SP, you're evil. And if you're declared SP and thrown out of the church, this can really be devastating to you as a Scientologist, because probably most of your family and friends are Scientologists. And if they talk to you, they can be declared a suppressive person and thrown out. So there's a lot of pressure put on a Scientologist in good standing to disconnect from a suppressive person. So a husband's declared, the wife will say, I'm sorry, I don't want to have any contact with you anymore. I don't want to talk to you or see you until you get in the back into the good graces of Scientology. This is called disconnection. And in order to get back into Scientology's good graces, you can go through these five steps. They call it A to E. It involves a lot of repenting your sins and confessing your crimes, you know, jumping through all the hoops they want you to do in order to say, L. Ron Hubbard was right and I'm wrong and I'm sorry and here's some more money. But until then, you're facing disconnection from all your family and friends. And for Scientologists, I mean, their entire world revolves around Scientology. All their friends and relatives are Scientologists. So it's a big pressure on you to not be declared a suppressive person, because you don't want to lose it.
So anybody can be declared a suppressive person. Paulette Cooper in Operation PC Freakout, she had an SP declare. After this episode, we may have SP declares. But only Scientologists and people with family in Scientology really kind of face the pain that comes with disconnection.
Right.
And it really seems like we're really defining the key elements of a cult here, that they define every single part of your life to the point that your social, your professional, your religious aspects are all tied into this one group, and it could all be yanked away, and that there's this great fear of you even being contaminated just by talking to people outside of that group.
But you'd also be contaminated just by talking to one another. You know, another aspect of cults is thought suppression or thought stopping techniques, which are built into Scientology. You can't think negative thoughts about L. Ron Hubbard. In fact, that's one of the questions they ask you in their security checks. They do constant security checks on people, and you, by the way, have to pay a fortune for the honor of being security checked.
Based on what Mark was saying, you'd think active Scientologists would have just steered clear of him. What with all the negative reporting he done and still does on the group, but this is what he revealed. Do they continue to knock on your door and stuff like that?
You know, I haven't really seen any major problems since then. I have been followed by PIs. I've been arrested by them a couple of times. Once when I was working for the LMT, and I flew up to Chicago to interview two dentists who had $20,000 on account that they were trying to get back. I was doing an interview with them, and we stopped in front of the Scientology building to do a little bit of the interview there, and I put my camera up to my shoulder and said, okay, tell me what's happening here. Before the dentist could answer, these two leather-bound thugs ran out of the building between the dentists, grabbed me by either arm, and arrested me for trespassing while I was on a public sidewalk. I had to go back and stand trial there a year later, and the jury found me not guilty in 25 minutes. I mean, it was insane. Yeah. But I mean, for Scientology, it cost them $300, we found out in the course of the trial, to hire these off-duty police officers to arrest me. It cost Bob about $60,000 trying to defend me. Because what Scientology wants is to be able to say that if you're a critic of Scientology, you are a criminal. Hubbard wrote that anyone who attacks Scientology is a criminal. All you need to do is dig up their crimes to silence them.
That's interesting because, okay, there's Alexander Gentry, of course, but what's in the news right now is Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes. And it looks like Katie Holmes managed to do the right thing. She cut off things properly, and so they're solving it quietly out of court. It seems like she's kind of figured out how Scientology uses lawsuits in the legal system to crush. What do you think she learned, and how can other people learn from these experiences?
Well, Katie's situation is unique. You know, from the moment they got together, there was this movement that was a joke, but there were a lot of people who bought into it. The Free Katie movement, you know, all the t-shirts experts who were up there, and all the signs were out freaking. People knew that going into this, this was nuts, and it wasn't going to last. Katie, when she filed for divorce, I think the world was on her side. They wanted to see her out of this. And Katie's situation was way different than any other marriage in Scientology. The attention of the media was focused on this like a laser for a week, until they suddenly decided to quickly settle and try to get this out in the news. Nobody else in Scientology is going to have the experience that Katie just had. Nicole didn't have it. Nicole, when they got divorced back in, what, 2000, 2001, she essentially lost their adopted children. They lived with Tom, and she's done interviews over the years saying what a great pain this is that she doesn't really have contact with her children. Katie managed to do what Nicole couldn't, and I think it's largely because the entire environment now in the media is so different than it was in 2000.
We then switched gears, getting into the business of Clearwater Florida's significance in the Scientology movement. Their takeover of Clearwater Florida is on the minds of people who are watching Gold Base closely. Clearwater is where L. Ron Hubbard landed after his time on the high seas, where Sea Org got its start, and they basically took over the town. Now, you lived in Clearwater for a while, did you not?
I did. I spent 2 years there, and it was a fascinating time. And I interviewed people who were important players in that period when Scientology snuck in there and took it over. They came to town under the assumed name United Churches and started buying up the first two. It was this luxury hotel, the Fort Harrison Hotel, which had been around for decades, and it had been the central entertainment hub for the area. But it had become run down, and it wasn't used that much. Well, Scientology came in and bought it for a song under a phony name, and they did that for the old Clearwater Bank building too, and that became the headquarters of the Office of Special Affairs. At that point, it was called the Guardian's Office, and these were the people who really did the nasty, dirty tricks against critics. The Guardian's Office was also in charge of, as it turned out, breaking into the FBI and the IRS and so many other government agencies and the Mental Health Institute, and they got Scientologists jobs in low-level positions as clerks and typists and things, and janitors. And so they'd have access to all of these buildings. And they bugged the IRS so they could listen into conversations about their tax-exempt status. They systematically stole documents from these agencies for 2 years until accidentally a Scientologist got discovered. And this led to a raid of the headquarters in L.A. and Clearwater back in, I think it was the late 70s. I'm not sure if it was 79. But at that point, they seized thousands and thousands and thousands of documents that detailed all of these dirty campaigns that Scientology was running. L. Ron Hubbard ran Scientology by statistics. You had to write down everything that you did. If it was your job to sharpen pencils, you had to write that I sharpened 12 pencils this week. And then next week, you're expected to do better than that. They call this being upstat if you do better than the week before. So in the case of OSA, or the Guardian's office, they would have to write down, well, we broke into these offices and we stole these documents this week. And so everything was written down. So when the FBI raided them then, they had this treasure trove that just walked them through these horrible, horrible campaigns they ran against people like the mayor of Clearwater, Gabe Casares, who I got to meet and befriend, and he actually sat down and gave me an interview years ago. They set him up on a hit-and-run accident when he was visiting Washington, D.C. for some government thingamabob. There was a Scientologist who befriended him and was with him on the trip, and she said, well, let's go down this road here. And there was another Scientologist waiting for, well, no, Gabe was a passenger in the car, and the Scientologist driving hit the Scientologist on the road and then sped off. They wanted to incriminate him in this accident to stop his campaign for, I think he was running for Senate.
In many ways, these were self-documenting crimes initiated by L. Ron Hubbard, but if I'm remembering right, his wife, Mary Sue Hubbard, actually took the fall for this.
Right. Hubbard always, you know, he kept his name off these things directly, but his wife and 10 other top officials went to prison for all these crimes under the umbrella of Operation Snow White. That was the program that they used to sneak into all the agencies and steal the documents. Some of the campaigns against Gabe were things like Operation Tacolus, and women would call his house and say, hello, to his wife. Hello, is Gabe there? We, you know, and try to imply that he was having having an affair with them. Just, you know, annoying things just to make his life miserable. And they're really good at that. Scientologists have specialized in just making your life miserable. Paulette Cooper was another person that they attacked.
With Operation PC Freakout, yeah.
I guess I'm a little blown away there. Why did L. Ron Hubbard not die in prison? I mean, it seems like this is insane. There's stuff with him infiltrating government offices. They've raided his offices. They've had documentation because this guy was apparently just a complete nut about documentation, detailing the ways that they use dirty campaigns against people, the way that they're breaking into government offices, they're spying on people. Why did this guy not die in prison jumpsuit? I don't get it.
When the raids happened, Hubbard was not in the Scientology org. At the time, his wife was, and these other people were. Hubbard fled. Hubbard spent the rest of his time hiding in the desert. This is why the location of gold was secret, and Hubbard's location was always top secret, because Hubbard was an unindicted co-conspirator in this case against Mary Sue and everybody else. But they could never serve him, they could never arrest him, they could never put him on trial. So he hid in the desert for the rest of his life, let his wife take the fall for it, never visited her in prison. Never called her. This is the type of wonderful leader this man is. He died essentially alone in the desert. He had two handlers that lived with him, Pat and Annie Broker, and there would be people who would shuttle back and forth, but very few. I mean, there are very few people who knew where he was.
So another concept we went into in this case is the touch assist, which is really a faith healing technique.
It's a process where if you're having some sort of medical problem, Scientologists believe that they could come into the hospital where you are and kind of run their fingers across you and kind of move the energy fields, and they can help you where doctors can't. You know, I've had people do touch assists on me, and I haven't, you know, felt a damn thing from it. But I suppose if you're in a receptive mind where you think, all right, well, maybe this will help, you can be convinced that perhaps it did. But this is a technique that Hubbard created that Scientologists believe in. There's also things like Astra Woodcraft, who grew up in Scientology, and as a child she talked about how she would fall and bang up her knee, and her mom would make her kneel down and touch the knee to the sidewalk where she actually stumbled, so that the pain from the injury would go back into the pavement. This was part of their healing process. You know, it's just wacky, but it's what Scientologists believe.
It's clear in the case of Alexander Jentsch that he was having breathing troubles, but instead of seeing a doctor about him, they laid the hands and tried to transfer the hurt away.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I don't know that much about the specifics of how Alexander dealt with his crises. Apparently, he also was taking medications and perhaps over-medicated himself on the night of his death. By and large, Scientologists aren't supposed to not see a doctor. It's kind of a gray area, because Scientologists have signs in every building and in every book saying the E-meter cannot cure any medical ailment.
Right.
You should see a doctor.
They're mandated to say that, though, aren't they?
Right. They are mandated to say that. Anecdotally, they always talk about, you know, you got cancer, you need to handle that with auditing. There have been a lot of people who have died, a lot of these powerful OTs that have died because they perhaps have not sought the proper medical care, that they've devoted too much time trying to audit away their problems. In the case of, you brought up Lisa McPherson. Lisa McPherson was 36 years old, I think, when she died. She was a dedicated Scientologist for about 15 years, I think. She had moved from Texas to Clearwater, Florida, to live and work there, to be close to the Scientology Center. She worked for a Scientologist, a top Scientologist in the city, named Benetta Slaughter. Benetta was in charge of all the public works in Clearwater. She was one of the big wigs trying to organize all of the Christmas events that they would have for kids, and she was always working with the city to put a happy smiley face on Scientology.
Lisa went clear. This is the first step
in the bridge to total freedom, really. You go through your basic auditing, you clear off all the negative incidents of this life, and then you're called a clear. A couple of months after Lisa said that she was clear, she was involved in a minor traffic accident, and when the paramedics arrived, she had stripped off all of her clothes and was walking down the street naked, and the female paramedic went up to her and said, "What's wrong? Why are you doing this?" She told the paramedic, "I need someone to pay attention to me. I need help." So they took her to the Morton Plant Hospital, which is just a couple blocks away from the Fort Harrison Scientology's enclave there. And they admitted her to the psychiatric ward. An hour later, 10 Scientologists came to the ward, tracked her down to convince her to leave there and go back with them. They did convince her. She told the doctor, I wanted to go with these people. Benetta Slaughter was one of those 10 people that came to take her away. The doctors were not happy about this at all. The Scientologists promised they would take good care of her and she would get proper care. The Scientologists took her back to the Fort Harrison Hotel where she was locked up for 17 days until she died.
For how many days?
17 days she spent there.
17?
17 days. And there were baby watch logs. They called this, she was put on the introspection rundown, which is what they used to, Hubbard wrote this policy on how to deal with somebody who's having a psychotic break, or as they call it, she went PTS type 3, potential trouble source type 3. So in this process, you're not supposed to communicate with the person who's having the psychotic break. You can't talk to them. They're supposed to be in silence. They're supposed to be given a chance to snap out of it. And the people who were watching over her were writing down what was happening every day. So there's these baby watch logs that run through these 17 days until the last 3 days of her life when they mysteriously disappeared. During the course of those 17 days, she lost 40 pounds. By the time they put her in a van to take her to the hospital, they didn't take her back to the Morton Plant Hospital, two blocks away. They drove her way out to, I think it was Port Richie. There was a hospital where there was a Scientologist working, a Scientologist doctor. So they took her out to him, and they passed, I think, 5 hospitals to get out there to see him.
And this doctor was
frantic, going, why did you bring her here? Oh my God, what have you people been doing? Well, in the baby watch logs, you can see that they were completely unprepared and unable to help Lisa. She's going increasingly insane. She's smearing her feces on the wall. She's barking. She believes she is L. Ron Hubbard, and is getting worse and worse and worse. She's getting weaker and weaker. They're stuffing medicine down her throat with a turkey baster. The one doctor that they had that was prescribing medicine for her, I don't think ever saw her, just prescribed it over the phone, and she didn't even have a license to practice medicine anymore, certainly not in Florida. So there was just a horror show. And Lisa died, I think, on December 5th of 1995. It took, was it a year before it was really uncovered in the press? I know Jeff Jacobson, who was a critic of Scientology and worked with me when I moved to Clearwater at the Lisa McPherson Trust, he, I think, was the first one to notice that in the police blotter in Clearwater, there was a notice about a death that had occurred at this specific address, and they were asking for information about it, if anyone knew. Well, Jeff recognized that as the address of the Fort Harrison Hotel and passed it along to a journalist, I believe, and that's how people started to uncover what had happened to Lisa. They were actually charged criminally with Lisa's death. The state of Florida was tried to criminally convict Scientology in her death, which had never happened with any church at all in America. And Scientology fought so hard to destroy that case. And ultimately, they managed to put so much pressure on the medical examiner that she changed her opinion on the cause of death. She originally said that Lisa had died from dehydration, and she listed it as, I don't know if she called it murder or suspicious or something like that, but they put so much pressure on her, she eventually turned it around to accidental. And at that point, after years and years of Scientology spending millions of dollars to derail this case, the state prosecutor said, well, all right, we don't have a case anymore, we're dropping the charges. So that was a huge success for Scientology.
This is about when I got into criticism, as I remember the founding, based off of this case, of the Lisa McPherson Trust. But it ended very quickly in 2001, if I remember right, because of Scientology.
The LMT?
Yes.
Yeah, the LMT, we opened our doors in January of 2000, and by the end of 2001, we had been run out of town. It was an exciting time. It was nonstop pressure from the Scientologists. Primarily, the group was created and funded by Bob Minton, who to me is an American hero. I love Bob, and I still can't believe he's not here anymore. He died a couple of years ago. Bob was a force of nature. He was a a retired international banker. You know, he started looking at Scientology because of free speech issues. He saw that they were trying to shut down criticism on the internet. They tried to shut down a news group called Alt Religion Scientology, and that sparked his interest. And when he started to meet former Scientologists and hear their stories, he said, well, I'm going to do something to help you. So he started paying for lawyers for people who were being sued by Scientology, because Scientology is just a juggernaut in the court. L. Ron Hubbard said, use the court to not to win, but to destroy. You can crush somebody using the court system, and that's what they do. So Bob tried to balance the scale a little bit, and Scientology hated that, so he became enemy number one. They told him at one point, don't you dare get involved with the Lisa McPherson case. So he went, oh, well, maybe that's something I should do. And he contacted Lisa's lawyer and offered to fund the case. You know, all the time we were getting subpoenaed, we were being brought to court. Bob was constantly being deposed. It was just madness. But they spent about $30 million to try to shut Bob down. And it cost Bob about $10 million of his own money to fight Scientology before he said, I can't take it anymore.
It drove Bob to the brink of suicide. It was, I
to see it firsthand. Once the LMT closed in late 2001, we shut the doors, but the LMT was going to continue to exist as a website. We would be a virtual business. So I moved up to New Hampshire, where Bob was living, and I continued working for the LMT there as the sole employee for another half a year or so before we finally called it quits. And I was working out of his barn. He had this wonderful barn that was a couple centuries old. And on the second floor of it, it was this really nice new office he had put in. So I was seeing everything that he was going through and the hell that he was, you know, every day I would show up there and think, is this the day that he is going to kill himself? Well, I find that he's pulled out a gun and just ended it all. I mean, it was really, really horrible. The nightmare that they put him through.
This is Ask an Atheist. 206-420-0997, and we'll be back after the break.
Looking to sell or buy a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, and surrounding areas? Plant your roots and invest in this entrepreneur-friendly area with world-class education and healthcare. Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 and let him work with you to achieve your goals, save your time, and protect your investment. Contact Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at dndrealty.ca. It's time you hired a professional.
Tacoma Telematics wants to help you connect with your clients. We can give you a top-notch web presence. Tacoma Telematics can take your website to the next level and make it an essential part of your business marketing, but that's not all. Want VoIP? We've got it, bringing large corporation phone systems capability at mom-and-pop prices. We build intuitive interfaces to help you manage your resources quickly and efficiently. Take advantage of our holistic approach to make your business communications succeed effortlessly. At Tacoma Telematics, we're committed to personal and professional integrity, open communication, and long-term relationships. See us at TacomaTelematics.com.
Billy! Billy! I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist. Atheist, 206-420-0997. I'm Sam, and with me is Mike, and we're talking with Mark Bunker about the strange case of recently deceased son of Scientology president Heber Jensch, and about Scientology in general.
There's an update that just came through about the Alexander Jensch Memorial. Tony Ortega, the Village Voice, just said that Heber Jensch will be attending a memorial service at the Scientology Celebrity Center in L.A. on Thursday.
Wow.
They've decided, I think because, and again, this is simply, you know, conjecture, but I think because of all the attention this has been getting in the press, that Heber would have to be released from the hole, this, you know, place where he's supposedly imprisoned in Hemet, California, and brought to this event, just so they can say, yes, he has made an appearance.
Let's start there. What is the hole?
Well, Scientology has a desert compound near Hemet, California. This is what's called the Int Base, or GOLD, which is short for Golden Era Studios. That's their production facilities.
And if I remember right, it was where L. Ron Hubbard spent a lot of his final days?
No, I don't think Hubbard actually spent time at GOLD at all. I could be wrong about that, but when he died in his last years, they were preparing GOLD.
Oh, right.
He was at another location. They were putting together a new home for him a distance from GOLD, and he was living in some trailers for the last few years of his life. They never really got the place prepared for him before he started living there. But at any rate, GOLD is where David Miscavige, who is the current leader of Scientology, runs Scientology. This is where all of the top executives are stationed, and these are where some of the most dedicated people in Scientology live and work. This is where the Sea Org members are located. Let me take that back, because there are Sea Org members everywhere, but this is the top place for them to be. This location was secret for many, many, many years. Even Scientologists had no idea where this was. If you were selected to go to this base, it was a big deal.
Somewhere near the Vatican and the Pentagon is how I've heard it described. Yeah.
Right. Part of, if you can drive past the compound, and some of it looks a lot like the stuff you'd see at Disneyland. There's some very colorful buildings. There's a swimming pool in the shape of a ship. There's the film studio itself is designed to look like a Scottish castle. But then there's also, you know, this other side of GOLD where these horrific things are going on.
In this place where they're trying to save the world, where all this stuff is going on, there's also this place called The Hole, where apparently Heber Jensch has been that since 2004.
Right. So The Hole is a double-wide trailer where the top executives who have pissed off David Miscavige, the current leader of Scientology, they are sent to this building and they're kept there under guard. They sleep on the floor, they're fed, you know, really crap, and their lives are miserable until they get back into the good graces of management. And people can be trapped there for years. I've talked to several people who were stuck in The Hole, like Mike Rinder, who was the former head of the Office of Special Affairs. This is the guy who was in charge of doing dirty tricks
when he himself was in Scientology. Now that he's left, he himself is considered by Scientologists an enemy of the church, so they've been attacking him and going after him. But he spent time with Heber in The Hole. It's a hell. It's not just execs who get this treatment. In Scientology, and this is especially true at bases like GOLD, any Sea Org member who pisses off management can be sent to the Rehabilitation Project Force, or the RPF. The RPF is like a prison camp atmosphere. You're forced to work half the day, and the other half you're studying the teachings of dear leader L. Ron Hubbard. You can't talk to anyone.
North Korea, I told you.
Excuse me?
Oh, North Korea is something we talk about a bit.
Exactly. It's a lot like you're subjected to all of this abuse. All your mail is read. All of your phone calls are monitored. That goes for every Sea Org member at the base. But it's especially bad when you're on the RPF, because you can be split up from your husband or wife for months at a time, or even years at a time, when you can't get a contact. I've talked to people who have gone years on this. And, you know, if you're stuck in The Hole, your wife can't even find out if you're having any health issues. I mean, it's really barbaric. And it could be on a whim. It could be because you made a joke. Joking and degrading is a very high crime in Scientology, and that can get you sent off to the RPF.
So I have to ask, Mark, if we know that these guys basically have a prison camp for dissenters, I mean, this is just a religious group. They're not a government. They don't have the authority of even a private prison. Why doesn't why don't we have like an FBI raid like of the FLDS church in Texas? I mean, if they're holding people against their will, that's illegal. So where are the cops?
Well, the cops really aren't that interested because it's such a complicated issue. For many, many years, the authorities have, you know, turned a blind eye to the Scientology abuses. One reason is that Scientology is notorious for attacking the attacker, and they don't want to, you know, have to deal with the hassle that will come from taking on Scientology. And this is a group that brought the IRS to its knees. But then the other complication is that although these people are imprisoned behind wrought iron fences with barbed wire and motion detectors and spikes at the top of the gates, there's also this spiritual enslavement where people believe that they're putting up with this because Scientology is their salvation. So if the FBI raided the gold base and they broke into the hole and they found Heber lying on the floor, he would say to them, oh, I want to be here. This is my religion. I'm happy here. No matter how degrading and how brutal his existence has been for years, he will still say, no, I'm fine. I want to be here.
Yeah, I guess I hear that, but I don't imagine that the people at the FLDS Church or the supporters of David Koresh would say anything different, yet we still had, you know, right, tanks at their doorstep. This is like serious Bond villain crap.
But you're asking, why doesn't the government do anything about this? So back in the late 70s, when the FBI raided and found this treasure trove of detailed documented abuse from Scientology, in there was also Project Normandy, which was their covert operation to take over Clearwater, to take over the media, to take over the government agencies, and seize control of the city, essentially. The mayor, and I also interviewed Lieutenant Ray Emmons, who was one of the police officers in charge of the investigation of Scientology. They told me they turned to the state government, they turned to the federal government and said, you've got to help us. Look at what we're dealing with here. You can see from these covert operations what we're dealing with. And Lieutenant Emmons said, they turned to him and said, are they going to come after me? You know, listen, it's a religion. We don't want to touch it. And that's really the driving factor. You know, people are frightened to take them on, and it's so difficult when you've got a court system that will say, oh, you know what, these are religious matters. I mean, there have been some really boneheaded judges recently that have made some rulings that are mind-boggling.
So in summation, if the case we haven't made today doesn't convince the atheist community that they should pay attention to Scientology, what would you add?
The wacky religion is kind of the cover for the really terrible things that Scientology's management is doing. Breaking up families, imprisoning people. This is something that we should be aware of. And especially if you're an atheist who is a young person, you should alert your friends, because Scientology is going after young people. So they try to lure you in and get you into the Sea Org and sign a billion-year contract. I think it's important for everyone to stand up and say, wait a minute, what really is going on here? It's more than just Tom Cruise has this goofy, oddball Hollywood religion. It's people's lives are being ruined. And people should stand up and say, it's not right. Check it out for yourself. Scientology's slogan is think for yourself, and ironically, that's the last thing you can do as you get deeper and deeper into Scientology. So look at both sides. That's the important thing, and spread the word, because, you know, there's people should be aware of what Scientology really is and what it does.
Mark Bunker is an Emmy Award-winning journalist. He's the guy behind Xenu TV, which you can see at Xenu.tv, and is known to anonymous everywhere as Wise Beard Man. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.
This is Ask an Atheist. My name is Sam. With me today was Mike Gillis. Our special guest was Mark Bunker. As usual, our music is by Chris Coleman. My production assistant is Rebecca Friedman. This was a pre-recorded show recorded earlier in the week, so there is no post-show. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM Media production. You can email us at questions@askanatheist.tv or leave us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. See you guys next week.